It's Tuesday, February 22, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Our concern this morning begins in New Zealand, where an earthquake that registered 6.3 on the Richter scale has killed at least 65 persons. The epicenter of the quake seems to be very near the city of Christchurch, and the mayor there indicates that the casualties are likely to escalate as the dawn breaks on Tuesday morning. Late on Monday, it was already clear that this was a signal event in the history of New Zealand. The New Zealand Prime Minister said this may be the darkest day in the nation's hour. If that seems rather strange, remember that New Zealand has been spared many of the natural disasters that have affected so many other nations. Earthquakes, we should remember, strike a special fear in the human heart. They come seemingly out of the blue. The damage can be absolutely vast, and there is perhaps psychically nothing that is more troubling than having the earth shift under one's feet. The great travail and turmoil of earthquakes has often caused a good many issues and questions to arise. The issue of theodicy, the question of evil and suffering, emerges out of every natural disaster, but perhaps most acutely with those like tsunamis and hurricanes and earthquakes that can come wreaking havoc and bringing death on such a massive scale. In the year 1755, Europe was struck by a great earthquake. The epicenter was very near Lisbon in Portugal. Thousands and thousands of persons were killed. Looking back, we're able to see that event in the year 1755 as one of the turning points in the intellectual life of Europe. There was a turn toward greater secularism. Of course, the Enlightenment itself was dawning about the same time. But there were many persons in Europe who simply could not come to terms with the fact that a loving God would allow such a thing to happen. Christians, in observing this kind of thing, whether firsthand or in the news, should be reminded of the fact that God is in control, that He is reigning in the events of history, and that what we see as we define natural evil is the outworking of a curse over against the natural order that was occasioned by the advent of human sin. We are living in a world that includes venomous reptiles, mosquitoes, all kinds of blights and viruses and germs, storms and earthquakes and all the rest, and they do real damage. We should never try to deny or to minimize the damage or the threat of all of these forms of evil. But we should at the same time understand that the first response is to pray for and to work for the health and well-being of those who are affected by such disasters. For that reason this morning, our prayer should begin with concern for the people of New Zealand, the hurt, the injured, and the grieving. Other events that have taken place in terms of the world in recent hours include the escalation of turmoil in the nation of Libya. There, strongman Muammar Gaddafi has been in power for over 40 years, but it does appear that his regime is tottering. His own son has spoken in rather desperate terms of the determination of the regime to remain in power. Gaddafi's son even warned of the fact that there could be a civil war in Libya, but what we're also seeing on the ground in Tripoli and other Libyan cities is the fact that not all dictatorships are alike. Back during the Cold War, the late Jean Kirkpatrick spoke of dictatorships and double standards. She spoke of the fact that not all dictatorships are alike. We speak of Hosni Mubarak, who, after all, did not serve in any legitimate sense as a democratic leader. We speak of him as a despot, and he was denounced as a tyrant. But he did allow persons to mobilize in the street. He did allow more of a free flow of information. He also allowed, we might note, Western media to be in Cairo and Alexandria and other cities as the demonstrations against his regime escalated. Contrast that with what's going on in Libya. Very few, if any, Western media are on the ground, and we already know that the Libyan military is firing on its own young people. We need to pray for the people of Libya, as we're praying for so many in other nations, especially in the Arab world. North Africa appears ready to explode as a tinderbox, not only Tunisia and Egypt, of course, but Libya and beyond. Even the King of Morocco has to be concerned with the legitimacy and stability of his reign in a place that hardly seemed touched by history. We'll be watching these events with great, great interest. There are other things going on in the world. Some of them you'll read about in the newspapers. Some of them you will see on television and read about on the internet. Some of them you may have been following with some level of interest already. One of them is the case of a young man in Iowa by the name of Joel Northup. I've mentioned already the fact that this boy, a sophomore, homeschooled but wrestling for a local high school, forfeited his first round match in the Iowa State Boys Wrestling Tournament. Now, to know something about that wrestling tournament is to know that the winner of that wrestling tournament is so celebrated that he becomes more or less a celebrity for life, something akin to Mr. Basketball in the state of Indiana. But Joel Northup forfeited his round because he drew an opponent who was a girl. And in this case, Mr. Northup, about 15 years of age, a sophomore, simply said that it was wrong for a boy to engage a girl in this kind of physical combat, which could lead to violence. He spoke of the fact that, with respect, he would simply have to, on the basis of his convictions and faith, withdraw from this kind of conflict and contest. Now, the media swarm about Joel Northup's decision has been fast and furious. In my article that I published today at albertmoeller.com, I point out the fact that what we have in this controversy is the revelation that we're really living in two different moral worlds, driven by two very different worldviews. Rick Riley of ESPN.com, the author of the influential column Life of Riley, has demonstrated no respect for Mr. Northup at all. He has simply lampooned his decision, he has basically undercut his right to personal conviction, and he has suggested, indeed, that what the boy really should have done is to wrestle the girl on her own terms, to gouge and poke and slam and take down, and in so doing, to show her proper respect. Well, here's the distinction between the two worlds. In one world, that kind of attitude of a boy to a girl makes some kind of sense. But in the other world, Joel Northup is seen as a young man of courage and conviction who did the right thing. In one world, all of these gender distinctions are basically being erased. But in another world, what I would have to suggest to you is a sane world, the distinctions between boys and girls, men and women, are honored, not exaggerated, but certainly not denied. You know, there are some interesting things going on here. At least two columnists for ESPN.com criticized Joel Northup as if he did not state the real reason for his reluctance, the reluctance of himself and his family reflected in his forfeiture of the round. They are suggesting that there was a sexual dimension to this because of the physical contact. Well, let me speak up for the Northups in this. They did not articulate that concern, though they did speak of the physical contact, because it would have been embarrassing and immodest to have been so graphic in making a point that was, after all, so obvious. But going beyond even where the other columnist went, and you'll see this documented in my article, Rick Riley just suggested that there should be no concern about this whatsoever. In his world, it makes sense that a boy would wrestle a girl. But in the world of Joel Northup, inhabited by people who in any previous generation would have seen to be thinking rightly, that's inconceivable. I mention in my article that the way of the world, the direction of the culture, seems to be toward Rick Riley and not Joel Northup. Let's hope that at least some controversy like this may awaken some to what exactly that would mean. There are several articles that have appeared in the media in recent days concerning young people. One of them appeared in USA Today warning that many teenagers and young adults are now putting up videos on YouTube and other social media sites that are featuring their own self-injury and self-mutilation. This pattern is something that puzzles many people, but the statistics are generally now coming to an overwhelming consensus. And that is that something like 14 to 21% of all young people at least experiment with some form of self-injury or self-mutilation. The addition of this kind of social media dimension just broadcasts and indeed adds to the popularity of this kind of thrill that comes by self-mutilation. Now, why does this happen? Observers suggest that it happens because young people feel powerless, or they are under increased pressure in their lives, or they don't feel anything and they want to feel something. This should serve once again as something of a wake-up call for parents. If nothing else, young people who are experimenting with this kind of behavior are issuing a cry for help. And as even the article that appeared in USA Today indicates, if that cry is not heard, That kind of self-injury that is now featured in these YouTube videos can go on to something far more serious, including suicide. Something else appeared also in terms of young people. USA Today, and this is an article by Sophie Turbush, indicates that Twitter, Facebook, blogs, and all forms of social media are now becoming the normal means of discourse and communication for youth and young adults. Now, this isn't really news, is it? Well, here's one issue that perhaps you haven't thought about. When it comes to the attention span of young people, we're shifting from blogs, indeed, to mini-blogs or microblogging at sites like Twitter. In other words, even the shorter articles that had first been popular on blogs are being reduced to something like the 140 characters of text of Twitter. Also, the numbers here do become interesting as you consider just how pervasive the social media exposure has become. NetPop Research, who did the study, suggests that 73% of youth and young adults have gone on Facebook over the last 30 days. By the way, a good many of them, more than six times a day. 49% use YouTube, 34% use Craigslist, and only 17% now use MySpace. What we see here is a fast-changing environment in social media, but it's among the different forms of social media that we find the change. The big directional is toward almost total saturation of youth and young adults, teenagers, and younger people under the age of 34 in social media. Now the main and major way they communicate with one another. Just a few weeks ago, the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco banned Happy Meals and other fast food meals packaged with toys. They did so in an effort, they said, to increase the healthiness of the population of San Francisco. Of course, there are all kinds of questions related to this. If nothing else, it's a form of governmental paternalism. But now, at least some in the city of San Francisco intend to take the logic even further. In case you haven't heard this, it is likely that voters in November in San Francisco will face a ballot initiative to render male circumcision illegal. That's right. Supposedly, enough signatures have now been secured on a petition to put this on the ballot before the people. Not coming from the Board of Supervisors in this case, but from a citizen initiative. This would criminalize all circumcisions of males under the age of 18. Obviously, there are huge issues here in terms of parental authority and also of religious liberty. We'll be watching what goes on in San Francisco, but if recent events are any clue, you can't write anything out and say it's impossible when it comes to the city of San Francisco. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I'm speaking to you today from Nashville, Tennessee. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.